morning, and welcome back, members, from 2 weeks, 2 week recess. Constituency fellows, I hope you are able to connect with your constituencies, do a lot of political work, servicing your communities and your constituency fellow members, and you managed to pick up the constituency and the communities were able to raise issues with you as their public representatives, and you are ready to raise those issues with the committee, with Parliament General. So we are here again from October until November, basically 2 months. And then we'll be breaking for the December recess. But this is going to be a very hectic 2 months. Later this month, we're expecting to receive a presentation on the medium-term budget policy statement, the mini-budget, which will spell out the state of the economy, the adjustment that needs to be done to the budget of the departments and the entities, and we will have to discuss that as part of the BRRR and adopt the budget, adopt the annual report. So it's going to be a very hectic 2 months, and I hope that members are ready for that. That discussion, that hectic period. I see our DA colleagues are not here. I don't know what's happening.
They're still fighting.
We know that there is a lot that is happening. We know that there is a lot happening in the party. I hope it is not because of that reason that have apologized for other reasons other than what we read in the papers. Political parties go through such difficulties, changes. Some of them are driven from internal, some of them are driven from outside, but change is change. So those people who are students of dialectics, like me, it always teaches us that there is only one constant, and that one is change. So you must understand that change is the constant feature of our lives. It will always happen in whatever way. So don't be surprised when you see changes happening. Change in weather, change in everything, in leadership, in ideologies, perspectives, in how people view things. So change is a constant feature of our lives. Okay, so I'm going to read the apologies, but first I must apologize, members. We had a discussion this morning with the Office of the Auditor General. But of course, we finished just 5 minutes before the start of this meeting. We arrived here, we're early even for other members. Honorable Boshoff arrived late, found us here. Honorable Gates was, and the whip, Manani, so almost all of you were on time, except Honorable Boshoff. So our apologies.
Yeah, you are late. Okay, let me start with the apologies. Start with the minister, who will not be able to join us today and tomorrow because of a doctor's appointment. And tomorrow is attending a cabinet committee meeting. And so he has requested the deputy minister to lead the delegation. So later on, the delegation will come led by the deputy minister. Honorable Nodada will join us later. He's only landing this morning at 8. Honorable Bozoli is still on sick leave, undergoing chemo, as we know that she's going through this process. She might be coming to Cape Town sporadically, as she says. And then Honorable Yabo is attending the Transport Portfolio Committee this morning. So members, today we'll deal with the department. First, we'll have an engagement with the AG, then receive an annual report from the department and interrogate that. Department is the only one today, no? And then tomorrow is the entities of the Department of Science and Technology. And then next week, we are on higher education and training. So we first deal with the department, and then we've selected a number of entities that we will then have to deal with. We can't deal with all of them. There are more than 100. So we just had to select a few. So let me hand over to the Auditor General to take us through. So the first part will just be the capacity buildings, refresh our minds about the role of the AG, how they can add value to what we're doing. And then they will present science and technology. So I've asked them to start with science and technology only. And then when we do higher education is next week. Then I've asked them to come and then to present the higher education one, which is quite comprehensive, and we don't want to get it today. Next week when we get to higher education, our notes and our records are not with us, so we'd like them to come next week. Over to you. Introduction and then take us through.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. For introduction, my name is Khabu Komapi. I'm the business executive in the Auditor General's office, overseeing the higher education and training portfolio. The gentleman on my left is Mr. Tiens Ilof. He's the senior manager responsible for science and technology with his entities. The lady next to him is Zamahla Ngumdijwa. She's responsible for the higher education department, NSF, and other CETAs. And I have Nana Skwazi, who's the senior manager responsible for the, some of the CETAs within the higher education and training. That's just a way of introduction. Chairperson, as you indicated, we have two presentations. The blue-colored one is basically the audit outcome, and there will be a section there that deals with science technology that we'll get to. But we thought, let's take an opportunity on a high level just to engage on the work that we do so that by the time we talk to the audit outcome, you pretty much appreciate how we fit in into the bigger picture. So we'll touch on our mandate. We'll also touch on the expanded mandate as it was effected 1st of April 2019. So I'll just try and take you through on a high level, and I can take questions of clarity in terms of our role and our mandate, and then I'll move to the main audit outcome. Thank you so much. The first part really just talked to our mission. And key to this mission, we are highlighting the fact that we exist to strengthen the country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, thereby building public confidence. So we basically fit in directly to your role. So our phase is to come and share what the observations that we've made during the audit, so that by the time you engage with the departments or the entities, you're quite clear in terms of what is it that we would have found. So the audit remains the core of what we are trusted in. We are founded in the Chapter 9 of the South African Constitution. Our main responsibility remains the external audit services for government and its entities. If you go to the mandate, as I indicated, I've alluded to the fact that we are founded by Chapter 9. If you look at Section 188, it talks to the AGSA must audit and report on the accounts, financial statements, and financial management of government and its institutions. And Section 20 of the Public Audit Act. So the main act that drives the work that we do is the Public Audit Act, the 2004, and yes, amended in 2019. When we audit, we then prepare an audit report. And that audit report, the opinion is based primarily on the financial statements. So when we get into any department, public entity, there are two main documents that we work with. It will be a set of financial statements that would be in line with the fiscal allocation that the entity or the department have gotten. But we also look into the performance APP and the performance report. But there's two different conclusions that we reach on each of those. On the financial statements, we provide an opinion. Basically, we say, are the financial statements fairly presented in line with the framework? We're saying, is the department, the manner in which they're reporting, is it a true reflection of the supporting documentation that are on the floor? And then we provide an opinion on that. But with the performance report, we don't give an opinion. We provide the key findings. So with the performance report, we say, here is the APP that got it through all the relevant channels for approval. We then come back and say, that which you put in the annual report, is it true reflection of what you've done? So that in instances where there has been over or under performance.
I don't know if it's me or what. I'm trying to locate the document.
Oh, sorry. This one has not been distributed. The officials from AGSA is busy trying to make copies of this one. So it is not, my apologies, I should have indicated that it has not been distributed. He's busy trying to make copies. So let's just follow on the screen.
Thank you, Chair. As I was explaining the difference between the opinion we provide on the financial statements and the feedback we give on the performance report. On the performance report, we're basically saying, is your performance reporting reliable? Meaning, is it a true reflection of what you've did? So that when all the oversight structures are making decisions, they make decisions based on a credible document. That's basically what we do. Section 5 of the PAA talks to discretionary audits. And this is some of the work that we do, and that will include, we do performance audit. We call them the value-adding audits. So we'll do a performance audit. Basically, we'll try there and say, are we using the money effectively, efficiently, and the like? In some instances, we do investigation. It's part of the discretionary audits that the discretionary mandate that we have. Now, this next slide talks to the core of what we do. So we audit and we report. And our hope is that once we report it, somebody else will take our report and do something with it. So we're hoping that our report would contribute to making to the decision-making process that all oversight structures go through on a year-by-year basis. This slide is attempting to differentiate what we do and what we don't. And the first part says we provide assurance that the financial statements are free from material misstatements. So by the time we come and we say there's about 5 audit opinions that we issue. The first one, if your financial statements are free from material misstatements, we would say you got an unqualified with no matters. And really the simple term is what we call a clean audit. So basically there we say you reported fairly on what you've done, thereby allowing the people who are supposed to make decisions to make informed decisions based on credible documents. The second opinion that we issue will say you are unqualified with matters. Basically what we're saying is we're reporting on two areas. Financial statements, you may be unqualified, which basically means that your financial statements are free from material misstatements. But when we say other matters, we say there's other things that we are not comfortable with. And that part will mainly cover the compliance with the laws and regulations, including the feedback on performance information. The third opinion is when we said you are qualified. When we say you are qualified, we basically say there are areas in your financial statements that we believe that they are not fairly stated. And in that area, in that instance, it will be when the matters are few such that we don't believe the entire set of financial statements is misleading. So we'll point it out. We'll single out those areas. We may come and say, your property, plant, and equipment and your regular expenditure are what worries us, and they are not fairly stated. In that case, we'll give you a qualified opinion. There's an opinion that we call adverse opinion. When we say adverse opinion, we basically say your entire set of financial statements is misleading. So there is when we find majority of the amounts and details that you put in the financial statements not to be supported by the relevant supporting documents, or you couldn't give us the supporting evidence to a larger extent, so when there's a combination. And then there's what we call a disclaimer. A disclaimer is actually not an opinion. A disclaimer is when we distance ourselves from the status of the financials in the entity. Yes, we will say it's a disclaimer of opinion. But we basically say, as the Auditor General, we do not express an opinion on your affairs because of the lack of supporting documentation that you did not provide. So by the time we express an opinion, we would have had instances where we requested supporting documentation. It does not come through. It comes through in a manner that is insufficient and unreliable. We then distance ourselves and then we issue a disclaimer of opinion. That's from the financial statement perspective. Now, part of what we do, we report on the usefulness and the reliability of the information in the APR. And the usefulness just talk to how clear we are in making the promises that we make as a department or entity. So the usefulness, it actually pulls from the things that you put in the APP and you pull them through to the APR. So we basically say, if you were going to set the indicators and targets, they ought to be very clear. There must not be an element of ambiguity in terms of what we need to achieve, so that any other person sitting wherever they're sitting, they're comfortable in terms of what you want to do as a department. So when we say your information in the APR is not useful, is either we are querying the fact that you are ambiguous, or we say you didn't set the timelines and et cetera. So we say the targets are not smart in summary. But then there's an element of reliability, and reliability on the annual performance report is when we say, what you say you've done is not correct. So it's unreliable, it's misleading. And there's three main pillars that we use to measure that. We say, is what you're doing valid, meaning supported by documents? Is it accurate, meaning the document reflects the performance that is exactly what you put in the performance report, and we say, is it complete? Meaning that which you've done, is it completely recorded in the annual performance report? If you meet those three main criteria, then we will say your APR is reliable. And that we say, even if there are instances where you did not achieve what you set yourself to achieve, you transparently reported to allow other people to hold you accountable, then we will not give you a finding. What we don't do in line with the APR, we do not provide assurance that service delivery have been achieved. So we say you will report as a department or entity on what you've done transparently, reliably, so that if there are things that did not go right, you transparently put them on the table and enable other people to make decisions. But when we say you had gotten, let's say, clean audit, we do not say you have achieved service delivery. We say you are allowing people to see that you did not achieve so that they can take you through the process if there's a need. Another part of what we do in relation to the laws and key legislation, we report on material non-compliance with the relevant key legislation. So legislation in the public sector is quite broad. So we are appreciative of the fact that there are a lot of prescripts that it is not possible for the auditors to audit the entire compliance space in one financial year. So on a year-by-year basis, we then select the focus areas. When we select the focus areas, we will tell you that for the year under review, we're going to focus on your budget management. We'll tell you we're going to focus on the supply chain processes, and we'll give examples on those focus areas. And then at the end of that audit, we will then uplift the key findings that we identified in those selected focus areas. What we do not do is to provide assurance that all applicable laws and regulations have been complied with, for the main reasons that we would not audit the entire laws and regulations in one financial year. So when we don't give a finding on a specific area, it would not be because that department may be perfect on it. It may be because we did not focus on it. But we tell you each year what we focus on. Another part that we do is identify the key control deficiencies that should be addressed. So if you look at the structure of our audit reports, there's about three areas. The first part deals with the financial statements, where we express an opinion explicitly. The second part of it will deal with the laws and regulation together with the performance information. The last part of our report is the internal control deficiencies. Those are not findings. They're actually our assessment of what we believe would have caused the audit outcome that you're sitting with. So the latter part of the audit report really is to say, these are the key controls that in our view contributed to the audit outcome that you're sitting with, depending on whichever one that you have. But in terms of the internal control, there's key main pillars, three main pillars of internal control that we believe if it works okay, the department should be set up to deliver accordingly. And the first part, we talk to the leadership. And under leadership, we then talk to the policies and procedures. Did you put in place policies and procedures that informs how things need to be done in your department or entity? So that is an example. But we also talk to the matters around, do you have an approved APP and APR? I mean, APP. That would then inform how you're going to usher service delivery. The second pillar deals with the financial, we call it financial and performance management. That is the one that deals with the analysis of the day-to-day internal control that informs financial or performance reporting. And the last part of the pillar of internal control is the governance. There we analyze how well do you deal with your audit committees, your internal audit, your risk management processes. So those are the three pillars that one way or the other you would see them featuring in our audit report. But we'll pull in whichever one is applicable in each scenario. What we do not do with regard to internal control is to say to identify fraud. So from the auditing standard particularly, when we perform an audit, we don't do an investigation of fraud. So we don't come in to say we are here to investigate fraud. We're there to ensure that, or to check that the financial statements are true, transparent, and reliable. Should there be fraud, though, then we do additional procedures to probe on it, but we'll not do an investigation. We'll then channel it back to the oversight structures to say, we believe there's indication of fraud here, it must go to the relevant places. The next slide talks to the audit process. And this is just a summary of how we follow the process of expressing an opinion. So it starts with simple things. We have what we call an engagement letter. So in each entity that we audited, we establish the terms of reference. So we would say, when must we get which document by when? And some of these things in the engagement letter reiterate that which is sitting in the PFMA already. So PFMA would say, as an example, the financial statements need to be submitted on the 31st of May to the AG. Those are the things that we'll build into the engagement letter. But we'll take it further to talk to what do we do when we identify a finding. And typically when we identify a finding, we put it on the table of management, the response, we analyze the response and the documents, and we conclude. And most of the time, our aspiration is that by the time we conclude, we agree that there's a problem when there's a problem. But yes, in few instances where the documents will suggest that we are correct, but they may not, you know, there will still be a bit of a reluctance. But nevertheless, we'll still take it through to all the relevant structures. So we'll take it through to the audit committees as well. By the time we sign the audit report, we would have engaged right up until the governance structures, particularly the audit committee. If I move to the next slide, I think this slide I've spoken to, it is a different audit outcome. Now, the work that we do in relation to Parliament, we have a pie chart there, and the first part says the committees gather information by examining reports, getting briefings, and holding hearings. This is where we fit into the work that we do. So typically, we would come after we performed the audits, and we would share what would have been our observations and what's our view in each of the entities that fall within a particular committee. But in different spaces during the year, the committee can call us in at any point in time with regard to a specific area that is of interest. And to the extent that that falls within our mandate, we do provide that information. So there we work closely with the committee and we avail ourselves whenever there's a need. Some of the things that we also do is we support the APP reviews, the proactive. That is one of the things we introduced, I think, about 2 years back. And there we came in because there was this need on the ground that, AG, you come a bit late when it comes to the APP. If you're going to tell me that my APP is not smart, but you're telling me after a year has passed, I pretty much can't do much about it. So then we started to come in proactively to look at some of the APPs, and we spoke to the portfolio committee to say, in our view, these particular indicators are not structured well. They're going to give you problems when you want to follow up on the work that you've done. So that is part of the value adding that we've introduced. When the committees also hold hearings for the departments on the entities, so we avail ourselves if there are follow-up questions. We normally avail ourselves to interact as well. And obviously, we also participate in the SCOPA processes for entities that need to go through to SCOPA. But I think at the core of this, Chair, is to say our work gets traction from the work that the committee does. So we basically put it on your table, so that by the time you start making decisions, you make decisions based on at least incorporating the work that we've done. So meaning without the portfolio committee, it's pretty very difficult for us, because after that, the reporting, we pretty much can be found nowhere. Now, this slide is what we put through as a pattern. This is the country view. So this is not just national department. We've taken into consideration all nine provinces. We've incorporated local government as well. So it is just to give you a 10-year picture of how we're looking in South Africa so far as audit outcomes are concerned. And I think a call to this is just to indicate that we have not necessarily been moving as quick as we ought to have moved. So you would see that the yellow bar is quite strong. Let me try and explain the colors. So the green is what we call loosely the clean audit, where we say you report it transparently so people can make decisions based on your report. The yellow part is where we say your financial statements are now reliable, and majority of the time, by the time we say they're reliable, there has been this dependency on the audit process, that the auditor must come, pick up a finding, give it to you, and then you go through the process of correcting with our support. And now we're moving to the space where we're trying to discourage that, that there's so much reliance on audit that it does not justify the actions that we supposed to the responsibility we supposed to discharge from PFMA. But the yellow part is also incorporating auditees that would have non-compliance with the key prescripts based on the focus areas that we have. The purple part is where we qualified. And remember when I explained qualified, I said there will be one or two, a few areas where we say we're not comfortable, we don't think that is correct. But nevertheless, you can continue with that annual report. The red part, or the last purple pinkish part, is the adverse. Adverse is where we say your report is completely misleading. It's not in line with the accounting framework. And disclaimer is when we're distancing ourselves to say we can't express an opinion. That's pretty much. But you see that the bigger part of what we have as a country would have been the yellow part. But this outcome, we only incorporated 17-18 because 18-19 we are still engaging the committees as we are right now. This part, this slide, talks to the history of irregular expenditure. And this is once more countrywide for the past 10 years. And you'll see that there's a spike, and then we stay right on top. And this is the key concern that we have, that when we do what we need to do as a department or entity, so municipality for that effect, we ought to do it within the prescripts of the law so that we do not compromise some of the intentions of the law as we then do what we need to do. So irregular expenditure just mainly talks to that, that whatever you've done it in contravention of the prescript, mainly the supply chain requirements. This is the history of fruitless and wasteful as well. And you would remember that the PFMA is quite clear. PFMA does not allow fruitless, unauthorized, and irregular. It prohibits it. And it goes further to say, in the worst-case scenario that you end up having fruitless, wasteful, and irregular, it gives you the step. What must you do? Investigate how this came about for two purposes. You are investigating for the purposes of strengthening that internal control that let you down. But the second part of why you're doing that, you want to know who caused the department or the entity that particular expenditure. And then PFMA will push you as well to say, please take action against that person. And to the extent that money has been lost, please recover the fiscus from that particular person. That's basically what the PFMA is saying. Our analysis of the root cause, I think this is just transversely in some of the areas, we observed that there would have been blatant disregard of controls. In some instances, there would have been capacity gaps. In some instances, obviously, vacancies and the instability in key positions, and we also observed unethical behaviors in some instances. And this is just a summary of some of the things that we picked up. Our efforts, as I indicated earlier, we do come in different times, in different spaces. Over time, the AG himself will do the road shows. So when he does the road shows, he would either visit a group of, say, accounting officers, like Fawcett, or he would actually be visiting the parliamentary members, the parliament members, or in some instances he would visit the auditees themselves, and those we call the roadshows. But we also have what we call the status of the records review. Back in the days we called it the key control assessment, where we've come in as an early warning process. We tell you as a department or entity that We've done an analysis of the first quarter, as an example, the second quarter, depending on our selection. And if the particular things are not addressed, you're going to find yourself in trouble. So that is the initiative that we do to try and support government. But we do not necessarily, we do not express an opinion on those areas. Now, let me get to the recent amendment of the Public Audit Act, effective 1st April 2019. So what the expanded mandate had precisely done is to try and stretch the element of consequence management a bit. So previously what we did, I said we'll audit and we'll report, and we'll leave it there. So what the extended mandate has done is to say, after you report it, do follow up on what are the consequences management processes that were implemented to make sure that where things did not go right, action is taken. That's precisely what the amendment provides. So which would mean, in instances where there would have been irregular expenditure, typically fruitless and wasteful, unauthorized, as much as we'll give you, we'll give the department or an entity the recommendations, we now have a mandate to come back and say, so these recommendations that I've given to you, what did you do about it? And should it be that you did not act on those recommendations, there are new things that kick in. And these are the main things that kick in currently. So the expanded mandate introduced the concept that we call material irregularity. And material irregularity, we define it as a non-compliance with or contravention of legislation, fraud, theft, or breach of fiduciary duty. Identified during an audit performed under this Act, the Act would probably will be PAA, Public Audit Act, that resulted in or is likely to result in a material financial loss. Quite a loaded definition. But it boils down to, if you have a non-compliance, or you have fraud, or you have theft, or you have breach of fiduciary duty, and that activity is likely to cause the department or entity the financial loss, then the new mandate kicks in. And how it kicks in, there's three different forms. Now we have the mandate to refer the material irregularity to the relevant public body for further investigation. So typically what the expansion of our mandate did is we would not be duplicating the work that is trusted on the Hawks, on the public protector, and the SIU and the likes. If we find that there's a material irregularity that falls within either the Hawks, the public protector, we then refer it to that investigating body accordingly. And we form relationships, we form the relationships right now with these bodies, because the aim is not to duplicate another entity's function. When we refer the matter, we then have a responsibility to follow up with that particular entity in terms of what would have happened. The new expanded mandate also brought in the principle of taking a binding remedial action. So we will no longer just recommend and leave it there. So we'll recommend, remind you of what the PFMA asks you to do, because the expansion of our mandate is drawing from the strength of PFMA and MFMA, actually. So we would remind the accounting officers that PFMA asks you to investigate and recover the money where the fiscals have been lost. If you don't do that, we will then take what we call a binding remedial action, where we now saying you shall do 1, 2, 3. And should it be that the accounting officer still does not act on our remedial action, we then issue what we call a certificate of debt, where we then recover the money directly from that accounting office. And all these three are the new terms that came with the expanded mandate. So they actually still drawing from the PFMA particularly. They still very much dependent on the committees, the oversight structures to support us. but of importance is, should it be that the accounting officer is not acting accordingly, then we recover the money directly from that accounting office. And that's where basically we would leave it from. Once we issue the certificate of debt, then we ask the executive to do the recovery processes. And then on a continuous basis, we'll be coming to the portfolio committee to also ask for your support in making sure that in instances where we've either issued binding remedial action or we issue certificate of debt, that the process gets followed and it doesn't get stalled. So that's primarily what, in summary, the mandate provides. We have examples of the difference between, the examples of material irregularities as an example. So one of the examples we put on the table is when there's a suspected bribery of an official to approve the payment for services not received, as an example. So somebody would have been bribed that you end up paying a service provider for the work that the service provider did not undertake. If we pick up that, there's a definite financial material loss, or there's a definite financial loss in the sense that the state would have paid for the services that would never have been rendered. So in essence, it's fruitless. So that will then follow the process of a material irregularity. Now we have this slide, I think it's slide number 22, now that you have the copy. And it differentiates between a material irregularity and irregular expenditure. Irregular expenditure is expenditure incurred in contravention of, or that is not in accordance with the requirement of any applicable legislation. So that's typically how it's put in the PFMA as well. But material irregularity is a non-compliance with and contravention of the legislation, as I indicated, fraud, theft, but key to that is that there must be a material financial loss. So the fiscus would have been lost. So from the legal, I think it's slide number 24, the legal obligations of an accounting officer or accounting authority, once more we reiterate, our expanded mandate did not introduce anything new that is not already sitting in the PFMA. What it did, it allows auditors now to also indicate what must happen. So that's basically what the expansion of the mandate introduced. Now, for the financial year 18-19, which are the annual reports that you're currently dealing with, we followed what we call a phase-in approach, and we've taken on board 16 of our clients or auditees to already implement PAA. So the year that we are now dealing with, there were 16 auditees across the country for the PFMA that were now audited in line with the new expanded mandate. And your portfolio was not one of the selected ones. So we've made a selection mainly on the amount of irregular expenditure that they will be sitting with. So we've first prioritized auditees which had the highest irregular expenditure in the country. But we also made sure that there's a representation across the country. So we made sure that each province had at least one ODT that we faced in. So for your portfolio, the annual report that you are looking at would not have the effect of the expanded mandate. So in summary, Chair, I think I tried to just condense everything. The slides that you're having have got the nitty-gritty of our role originally, and it then indicates what would have been amended. I think if you allow me, Chair, I can just leave it there so that there can be time for the next presentation as well. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much. I think that was useful to everybody in the in the house, including those who have been here before and those who are new. It refreshes our mind about what is the role of the AG. Of interest is the new expanded mandate and the capacity of the AG to implement this expanded mandate. Basically, when Parliament was adopting this thing, the word that was used was the teeth, you know, who are giving you the teeth to bite. So whether you have got the capacity to bite is something else. But through this phase-in process, I think it's good. Maybe we should just take the audit for science and technology, and then when members then ask questions, they can then ask questions on the first this presentation and the science and technology, because we still have the annual report of the department to deal with. Is it fine, members? Are we okay? All right, let's move on.
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to allow Tiens to take through the presentation. Tiens, you ready? Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chair.
And this one is in your packs, eh? The one that is distributed. I think at the end, towards the end, is science and technology.
We will start on slide, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. The science and technology portfolio starts on slide 36. Of the combined slides for the portfolio.
Speak next. Closer to the mic. Yeah.
36 of the slides. The first slide for science and technology outcome. Just a general background with regard to the science and technology portfolio on slide 37. The portfolio consists of the Department of Science and Technology with four Section 3A public entities. That's the National Research Foundation, known as NRF, Human Science Research Council, HSRC, South African National Space Agency, SANSA, Technology Information Agency, TIA, that's Section 3A's of the department. Then the department have one other entity that's not currently listed as part of the PFMA as a public entity, but it's resounding under the department. And the department have also one national government business enterprise, a Section 3B public entity, that's CSIR, Council for Science and Industry Research. That's the whole portfolio for the Department of Science and Technology, or in future, Science and Innovation. If I could move to slide 38, I think I'm not going to explain in detail the audit opinions. Gabo have given a presentation, but I could maybe just touch on the first two items. The unqualified with no findings, we call it loosely a clean audit approach, that audit opinion, that's where your financial statements
okay,
are correct.
Okay, let's move to the next slide.
Okay, so
that has been explained.
Okay. Then for the last 5 years, slide 39. The outcomes of the portfolio. We report on the four entities that's audited by the Auditor General. We commend the department as well as CSIR for maintaining the clean audit outcomes from the previous year. So they are the two entities that have received the green color. Then NRF, that's National Research Foundation, and HSRC, have received unqualified on financial statements, but have a material non-compliance with regard to preventing of irregular expenditure. That's the only aspect that's in their audit reports. If I could move to slide 40, this gives a high summary of the status of internal controls within the portfolio. Maybe as a start, I must indicate that there is no intervention required. It's only green and yellow in this slide. We didn't identify any significant issues with regard to leadership for any of the entities that we report on, as well as for risk management. They were none identified. The issues with regard to these entities is with regard to financial and performance management. It relates to two main categories of issues for the entities that's in the yellow blocks. It's with regard to, firstly, prevention of irregular expenditure for HSRC as well as NRF. I must indicate that the entities have policies and procedures. It's fine-tuning the specific policies and procedures on senior management level to ensure that all irregular expenditure are prevented, because you will see in their financial statements there is still irregular expenditure occurring. Then the other dimension to the internal status of internal control is with regard to the performance reporting. We have in the audit reports of HSRC as well as NRF indicated that their performance reporting was materially adjusted and corrected. They have done the correction, so there is no material findings, but the controls didn't pick up that specific items. In general, otherwise, we could indicate that the controls within the portfolio is in place. Assurance providers, slide 41, that mainly relate to senior management. That's where we have issues, as well as only to two entities, HSRC and NRF, and that relates to the prevention of irregular expenditure, as well as making sure that the APR, when submitted to the Auditor General, are correct. I've also included a slide for completeness purposes, slide 42, with regard to the audit outcomes of the public entities that's not audited by the Auditor General. SANSA have received also a clean audit, unqualified, with no material findings, similar for TIA. ASAF have received an unqualified opinion on the financial statements, but there is still the issue that their legislation requires that they must report in terms of the PFMA, and they're still not listed in terms of the PFMA as a public entity. So that's the main concern from an auditor's perspective. If I then could move to slide 44, that's with regard to the financial health of the portfolio. We are overall satisfied with the financial health of the portfolio. There are currently no going concern issues in the portfolio. But what we highlight is that we must take note that there is entities that is self-funding, or majority of their funds is self-funding, like, for instance, CSIR. So they must be on their guard with regard to ensuring that they receive the necessary contracts, revenue, and they must manage their debtors' recoverability. That's the aspect that we highlight. But in general, we're satisfied with the portfolio. Then slide 45. That is fruitless and wasteful expenditure over the last 2 years. Harbour explained the definition of fruitless and wasteful. There was an increase from 300,000 to 800,000 rand in the portfolio. I've also indicated the nature. The first or the biggest portion is of that fruitless expenditure relates to a cancellation of a venue for the Mandela mining in Daba. That's in the department's financial statements.
For what?
The Mandela mining in Daba.
Mandela mining in Daba.
That's plus minus 500,000 of the total expenditure. What we have also indicated in that specific slide is that all previous year fruitless and wasteful expenditure are being investigated 100% for the previous years. So the consequence management is in place in the entities. Then irregular expenditure. It decreased from 52 million to 12 million. It is mainly or mostly related to procurement and contract management. It is disclosed within the financial statements of these entities. There is investigations for the previous year. They are doing consequence management. CSIR is the biggest amount. It's 6.3 million. And it relates to the capturing of an evaluation matrix where you actually evaluate the suppliers in terms of the supply chain, where there was a calculation error that actually resulted in a wrong supplier being appointed to the specific item. Otherwise, the irregular decreased. Then with regard to supply chain management, it was in two entities that there's a common finding. That's not all the findings, but the most common finding is uncompetitive and unfair, but processes at 80% of the entities, so that's actually two of the entities. That increased from 25% from the previous year. So then the snapshot. That's a high-level summary on slide 48. We have a decrease in our clean audits, and that's because HSRC was last year a clean, it's financially unqualified with no findings, to financially unqualified with finding on prevention of irregular expenditure, similar to NRF. So that is the decrease in our clean audit outcomes. All our financial statements were financially unqualified. So the financial statements is correct. We have no material findings on performance reporting, although we will report in two of the entities that there were material adjustments, but no material misstatements on the performance reporting. No findings on compliance, that actually decreased with HSRC now having a material non-compliance in the prevention of irregular expenditure. And then we have a green arrow, maybe not always correct, but our irregular expenditure decreased in the total portfolio from 52 million to 12.5 million. That's a very high-level summary of the portfolio, snapshot. The root cause. The entities have controls in place for managing irregular expenditure, procurement and contract management and supply management. But these contractors must, internal controls must be beefed up to ensure then where the contracts are actually or the supply chain procedures are actually performed at project level or at business unit level in NRF, that they fully comply with the supply chain. And that's the only issue that still allow that there's still irregular expenditure occurring. So it's a slow response to addressing these risks. That's the main root cause for the portfolio. So it relates to the two entities with the non-compliance prevention of irregular expenditure. We made some recommendations to our auditees. There's not a lot of audit findings, but we require them to have an action plan for all our audit findings from the management reports. That's an internal document. And we also required NRF and HSRC to ensure that they fully comply and ensuring that all their procurement are in terms of the supply chain and procurement contract management, and that they fully comply with the new Treasury regulations or instructions on that. Then we highlighted the possible recommendation as a commitment to the portfolio committee there, to the portfolio committee, maybe to ensure that there's a monitoring process and the department and entities report to the portfolio committee in future on their action plan and the achievement of these plans to address the issues in the audit report. So, Honourable Committee, that is the science portfolio.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much to the Office of the Auditor General team. So we are going to open up for members to engage, just basically to ask questions of clarification. If there's anything here that has been picked up, I think please note it down so that when we engage with the department, we can then find out from the department. So this is more of an mechanism that helps us to do our work of oversight, the auditors, and the audit report, both on financial information and performance information. So we are fine, I guess. Just one question from Honorable Mananis. Okay, Honorable Mukasha. Okay, Honorable Gates. Yeah.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me firstly acknowledge the presentation to say really it was thought-provoking, because when the lady was presenting, I was touching down many questions, and now they are free on some other areas on the basis that you said you must ask the department. However, I just want to, I'm not sure if my question would be one, but I will try to make it I would summarize it. One, I want to check when you do your probing, what are the other mechanisms that you're using besides visiting that particular department to say we're looking for 1, 2, 3. The other one is with regards to your issue of your visitation. Do you always inform the department that we are coming and we need 1, 2, 3? Because I think at some other matters, people comply to what you are asking for and they keep on doing unlawful things on the basis that you have certain focuses that you are looking at that particular time. So I want to check on that issue. Lastly, I would want to just ask in terms of cases that you have dealt with, because if you could check on the other slide, there's an indication that 100% investigations, everything seems to be right. Can you just give us smaller than a highlight in terms of those cases that you were able to bite? As the chairperson has said, that at times your the AG doesn't bite, but do you have cases that you can proudly say that, but on this one we did bite? Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Honorable Kasha.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think Chair must acknowledge that we appreciate the composition of the delegation here today. It's very inspiring as a woman. So we appreciate what is sitting in front of us. We must acknowledge that.
Okay.
But also, I have an absolutely very limited appreciation or understanding of finances and things like that. And I'm a geographer by profession. But I keep on seeing the HSRC popping up a lot. When I'm noting on a couple of the pages, I think if you would note, apologies, on page 39, on page 41, on page 40, page 45, there's a lot of issues that sort of come up with the HSRC. And I just want to just clarify, just before I ask the department the why, I want to get, am I observing a particular challenge with that particular entity? And that's just the clarity that I'd like to have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Gates. Honorable Gates. Yeah, you are the last.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think, I'm just going to be brief because they have already mentioned that they do have a mandate to expand perhaps their scope as the AGSA, the Auditor General. I don't know when will that be in effect, like will the expanded mandate, for instance, how do you refer some of the outcomes, you know, the recommendations that are not taken serious by the departments or the public entities. What are you doing with such recommendations? Or we are waiting for 2021 to start exercising your so-called expanded mandate. The second thing I need to understand, perhaps it will go in line with the very same expanded mandate we talk about, because the leader, the lady here explained vividly that we do not dwell much into the investigation of some of the things that they are getting. But when you look at it, I mean, for an argument's sake, you get to a department or a public entity and you conduct an audit, right? And the understanding I have or we have is that they don't critically go deeper into checking what is really happening. Like the example we've made the other day in the same committee when CETAs were here, that, you know, they will arrive and say, we want to audit, audit the department in relation to the stationery they've bought or for the office use and so forth, only to find that the office or the people who do procurement process have charged a supplier, or the supplier charged the department a pen to be 150 rand, a single pen. In an event of that nature, the auditors, when they get there, they don't dwell much to check how much was a single pen, right? A pen that was supposed to be 5 rand is 150 rand. The only thing they check is to comply, to say, if this is the code that is coming from a supplier, and this is how you have complied as an entity, and they leave it there. As long as they correlate, they don't dwell much into checking, really, how much is what, and the inflation of prices, because that's where corruption, massive corruption is happening. These qualified and unqualified clean audit, people will get clean audit, and that person is the most corrupt fellow. So I think in essence, in a nutshell, the expanded mandate should zoom into that. I do not know some, because I think this was just a summary of some of the areas that your mandate was extended or expanded. But we really need to look into that to check if really people are honest with documents and receipts they send to us. A receipt is just a receipt. And for an entity like Auditor General's office or the Auditor General South Africa, not to be complicated and sophisticated is a problem, because we are dealing with a corruption at a very high scale. I think I'll leave it there, Chair.
Okay. All right. I'm sure you are ready for responses.
Thank you, Chair. Let's accept the compliment. We take it as a compliment, and we draw on the strength of what you say. We aspire to drive that agenda. Okay. So it is deliberate. There was a question, Chair, on the mechanism of probing, and I think it was linked to, do we always tell them? And let me try and answer it in summary. We have different ways of probing, and we call it a risk assessment process. So prior to us building what we call an audit program, basically the procedures that we're going to execute, we perform a risk assessment. And risk assessment, we check different sources. So we do an analysis of their own financials without necessarily asking, you know, only inquiring from them. We go through a couple of documents. So we'll look through your portfolio committee minutes as well. We'll look through the audit committee minutes. We'll look through the internal audit report. To a larger extent, we'll also check if there are investigations happening in different entities. And we then build in a risk-based approach from there. So our sources will tap from, yes, we speak to them in some instances. We'll speak to other people that are not necessarily management. So in an entity, in some instances, we can talk to a very junior person, because sometimes some of the things come from there. So we do try and get information from different sources. But building from there, we then formulate what we call an audit approach, and then we'll execute. But when we execute, in terms of do we tell them when we go there, let me marry it to where we do physical verification. And that we do for like assets, you know, property, plant, and equipment, when we need to see this asset. Yes, we tell them. We say to them, we're going to go to Mpumalanga, if it's in Mpumalanga, we're going to go to this particular thing and we want to see it. But when we get there, we then capacitate our teams to be able to pick up if there would have been other things that happened building up to our visit. So if an asset would have been moved, as an example, there prior to our visit, there's other things that we try to build in. But you're right in saying the larger part of what we do, we say, give it to us. So let's check the expenditure, the spending as well. We'll say to them, give us this particular invoice. But we then build in other mechanisms to inform us if this invoice was generated particularly for the audit and not for something else. But the limitation that comes with the audit is precisely the fact that you have to work through management to the larger part. So as much as we can try and make it a bit sophisticated, if I were to borrow your word, the core of it is that I must still speak to them. Okay. Now, there was a question on the HSRC, and I'm going to peg it last, if that's okay. I want to go to the question from the Honourable Member. That talks to, so we've made recommendations. I think you used the word not taken seriously as an example. And then you married to the fact that it's actually a value for money principle, where you say they're paying items at inflated prices. Yes, you're right when you say it's part of the expansion of the mandate, because at the core of the expanded mandate, it refers to material loss, as I was explaining it. So which basically means that if I'm paying a bottle of water at a price that is inflated, I had caused a loss to the fiscus that is unjustified. But it didn't only come with the expanded mandate. It was there because PFMA defined fruitless and wasteful expenditure to incorporate those elements. So as much as we may not have been very detailed in it, there was a procedure that we execute. In a couple of instances, we were able to highlight it, to say you've paid for something that is not worth it, and then they will disclose it as fruitless and wasteful. So that's why I think when we talk about the opinion on the financial statements, we say report transparently. If you go to the note of fruitless and wasteful, a lot of these entities will say it there. So they will say, I have fruitless and wasteful, but there will be a global amount. So they will say, I have fruitless and wasteful, let's argue, 20 million. And our expectation is that transparently they put it there, probe on it. Because as you probe on it as a committee, you are going to get to the conclusion that says you could have done your homework better, or you could have paid a bit less. Okay. So I think it's part of the things that we cover. The issue around the pattern on HSRC, and I'm going to ask Tiens, can we respond to that? And then I'll close it off.
Thanks, Chair, Honourable Member. With regard to HSRC, HSRC is actually drawing attention because they were last year clean. They didn't have anything in their audit report. What happened during this review in this period, they actually identified and we identified irregular expenditure. They properly disclosed this irregular expenditure, but it's similar in nature than the previous year. The non-compliance and prevention of irregular expenditure that we report on is to indicate that their controls were not sufficient to prevent the irregular expenditure of similar nature reoccurring this specific year. So it relates very specifically to certain expenditures that didn't comply with procurement and contract management, supply chain management, as well as if you go through their audit report, the other matter that's in the audit report, it's not a material finding, it's just highlighting that the annual performance report that they've submitted to us, we materially adjusted, so they've corrected, but there was still an issue. So that's the two items in the audit report. The material adjustment was also in the previous year. So it's mainly that they're not in a position to prevent all irregular expenditure. And some of these expenditure items that they procure is very, how can we say, specialized in nature or very circumstantial to that specific entity. So it's not your normal expenditure that you procure. That's what's actually happening. That's why they're focusing, because we have to report on it to say it's actually happening and it's a material non-compliance. That's why you will see they moved from totally clean audit to an unqualified financial statement, but only that aspect, prevention of irregular expenditure within their audit reports.
Okay. You want to close in?
Yes, thank you. I think in summary what we're saying is that the financial management, which particularly speaks to putting controls in place to monitor compliance with the key prescripts, is what is beginning to show up in that entity. And should it be that we don't respond to it at internal control level, we're going to battle, because we're going to wait for the auditors to tell us that there's a non-compliance. So we're asking them to look at that area, strengthen it so that it can prevent the incurrence, or rather the non-compliance. But I think, Chair, in summary, that is our message. I think the portfolio, as you can see over the past 5 years, it's been coming a bit better. It's just that there's a lot of going back and forth. And I think the going back and forth can easily be dealt with by just saying, what is the key internal control between the three elements, three pillars, leadership, financial management, and governance? Which one should we just tighten and then the portfolio should be pretty much stable. But other than that, I think we're comfortable. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. there are no red lights flicking in the portfolio. The starting red is green and yellow. So there are no major issues in the science and technology portfolio together with the entities. we will get higher education and training together with the entities next week. And I think that's where, in the main, issues will be flagged. But I think the portfolio, I noticed that there is a reduction in irregular expenditure from 52 million to about 12 million, which is not bad. So there's not a lot of things to make us to worry a lot on this thing. But anyway, thank you very much, Auditor General. We note the new expanded mandate. We hope that the teeth that you have been given, you're going to use it to bite. I like the two last part, the issuing of a binding remedial action, and the last one is the certificate of debt. Now, if you can start exercising those powers, I think the management of finances in the public sector will improve significantly, because currently there are no consequences, and this introduces consequences. If the certificate of debt has been issued, an accounting officer has to pay. So that will be serve as a deterrent in the main. Yeah. But I think as we move on, I was listening to the question. I think as we move on, we'll begin to appreciate the role of the AGSA and the department or the entities that are audited. Because generally, the audit comes at the end when the action has already been taken. To say, you have spent so much, you have done this thing, you have done this thing, proof. You see, it's a post-action a kind of validation that everything else went well. So you are not there to prevent. You are there to come and tell us whether whatever that has happened in accordance with the law and everything else. Thank you very much for that. So we will expect you again next week, Tuesday. I think we must schedule an hour to have a detailed briefing of higher education and the entities next week, probably an hour and a half. All right, let's get the department then. Thank you very much. I'm sure you'll be here with us. So we are supposed to get a briefing from the department on the annual report. We'll decide whether we take the first quarter expenditure report now or later on. But I've noticed that the department has not been around, and they were expected to be here at 10:30. I see the deputy minister has just arrived. Welcome, deputy minister. We have been missing you for some time. We are happy that you are here today. They are coming in.
you went to fetch them. No, no, Shanaz says they were waiting outside. They thought this was a closed meeting. No, none of the meetings of the portfolio committees are closed. They can only be closed, so there will be sufficient prior notice given that the meeting is closed. But generally, there's no meeting of the portfolio committee that is closed. So they,
yeah.